This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously,
especially when they give advice.
Do not take Marshall's analogies literally,
especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey.
The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670 The.
Ryan Urlacher, thanks for joining us here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, appreciate you.
Aaron Rodgers is still playing football, Brian.
Yeah.
He's now on the Steelers. What do you make of him continuing his career with Mike Tomlin and the gang in Pittsburgh?
So I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan. People can get mad if they want to. I like the way he plays. I like what he stands for. I like what he says. I like what he stands for. I like what he says.
No, God, please, no, no!
What's their ceiling in your eyes?
I would say 11, 12 wins.
No!
I see what you did there at the end.
What is the floor and ceiling for the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers as their starting quarterback?
I think the ceiling is Super Bowl.
What?
Yeah, I said it.
Whoa.
Well, I didn't force a question on him. I just need to know what exactly was going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because he said, I am an Aaron Rodgers fan unapologetically, and believes, what do you say, 11, 12 wins? That gets you in the playoffs, right?
That gets you in the playoffs.
And you can't get to the Super Bowl unless you're in the playoffs.
Like what he says.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, our show is like an onion. It has layers. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, broadcasting live from The Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Our producers are Ray Diaz, and we have a special guest today, Tyler Buterbaugh. Glad to see Tyler in the house. Brandon Fryer also helping out as well. You can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Hello to our Twitch mob. The chat is fast and furious. It is a show within a show. Our producers are Jacob Stutz and Connor O'Donnell. We are happy to have you. And you can text us. It is 312-644-6767, our text line. You can also call us as well. And today, Marshall, we have to set up the day after. The day after you had very little sports to watch last night, so we did Euro Trip as a crew. We will talk about that at halftime at 11:45, because we'd been wanting to do a movie club for a while now. In the meantime, not only do the Cubs get back to work tomorrow, they get back to work tomorrow against one of the hottest teams in baseball. The Red Sox reaping the fruits of their labor when it came to trading Rafael Devers. We wondered how long it was going to take to be able to make that work again. And now you are facing at home what should be a great series against the hottest team in baseball, winners of 10 in a row. And a familiar face is facing the Cubs. Lucas Giolito is on the mound. But this begins not necessarily the second half, but the next step as you try to figure out, with the Brewers breathing down your necks at one game back, Cardinals at 6.5 games back, what you're going to do from here on out.
Looking at Giolito on a Friday and then Garrett Crochet waiting for you on a Sunday afternoon is not exactly the way you want to start against the second half of your schedule, especially since, as you mentioned, Layla, Red Sox are red hot. That's what they are, 10 straight wins. They don't look like sellers. We were talking, 2 weeks ago about Alex Bregman possibly getting traded. That looks like it's probably not happening because we're running out of time between now and the deadline. We are 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. And so what happens in this two-week sprint is going to determine who the Cubs could add, who the Brewers might add, who the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets, the Giants. That's the problem. There are too many teams, and all the teams that make a lot of money, or excuse me, pay their players a lot of money, are still in the mix. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Cubs need to do. Here's what's interesting. There are, 64 games left? And I think David talked about this on Mullion Hall. If the Cubs just go .500, that's 32 more wins. That's an 89-win team. Just .500 baseball. They're on pace to win much more than that. What they do these first 2 weeks out of the break could separate themselves from the rest of the competition. Remember, they start the day, third best record in baseball? And it doesn't feel like that because of just how hot on the heels the Milwaukee Brewers are.
The Cubs have played so far 96 total games at 57-39. And 57-39 sounds absolutely fantastic, doesn't it? You would take that every day if you knew at the beginning of the season this would be their record coming out of the All-Star break. But the issue isn't just that, as we know. It's what's going on in Milwaukee. They're getting healthy. We know that they want to make some deals, most likely. It's just a matter of what's going to happen. They almost made a deal with themselves when you consider bringing up Jacob Mizrowski.
Don't forget about the trade they already made. Aaron Civale out. Who came in for that trade?
Yeah, Andrew Vaughn. And as we heard Steve Sparky Pfeiffer say to us yesterday, he hosts the afternoon show there at 105.7 in Milwaukee. He said, you know, if Andrew Vaughn could continue hitting like this, then what's possible? And then I said, welcome to White Sox fandom. Circa maybe 2021 to 2024, through 2024. Point being, though, they are close. They feel like they are close. And that's why I think it's important. Setting the tone right now, let's rewind to 2024, last September, when we heard Craig Counsell pretty much talk about this very idea, what it was going to take to really be a successful team where you felt you were in it, and the Brewers were the comparison, and this was last September.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message sent really is that, look, there's a big gap. I mean, they're ahead of us by a lot. And it's a talented team on and off the field. It's a talented team. But there's a big gap, and we got room to make up. There's no question about it. And so that makes it, frankly, that makes it daunting. They've been good, man. I mean, for the division, I mean, I'd say that about the other teams too, right? You know, they've created a gap the last 2 years, in the division. So yeah, we got room to go, man. Like we got
a long way to go. I like hearing what Craig Counsell had to say there. Tyler, thank you for cutting up that audio. But additionally, if that doesn't tell the future, I don't know what does. I feel like, to his credit, the Cubs acted on it. We've seen how they've been able to address their roster needs. We know that they're going to be buyers. We heard Jed Hoyer confirm that last week when he was talking to Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. So when I consider all of these elements, I understand that they know what's ahead of them, but they also realize that you can't just let up because you know exactly who's behind you. Like, it can't just be about you and your record anymore, as much as I want it to be.
And let's be honest, we've gotten to a point when you're 18 games above 500 and when you have the second best record in the National League, that is the goal. Because if you can hold on to that, you get a bye in the playoffs and it's less hard because you have less games you need to win a World Series. So positioning yourself, you've done that so far, but holding on to that position is imperative on your ability to make it not just to the playoffs, but to do something when you get there.
That's it. When we were talking with Molly and Ha in the transition segment earlier about what it takes to make the playoffs, and you see how all these teams think they're in it. You know, it was a reported 25 at the beginning of last week, which is a massive number of teams, clearly. And then you consider what it takes to win in the playoffs. Craig Counsell's teams are a good example of that. When you know that their history isn't good, when you know that they haven't had a history of winning in the playoffs, you understand the difference there. But what it takes to ensure success and ensure yourself what you think is a World Series, I always say, when you think you have everybody, you have to then get more. Because that's been how you've seen teams operate, I'd say, over the last 7 or 8 years of modern baseball. You think that roster is stacked, and then they go out and make some massive move at the deadline, and you're going, okay. And I joke about this, but going back to even our World Series predictions yesterday, Marshall, how I thought in 2023 the Yankees would make it to the World Series. And I say, all they needed was Juan Soto to go along with Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge and those mashers. I joke about it. But I think that is what it takes to separate yourselves. Are the Cubs there yet in that discussion? I want to start with playoffs first before I go into ensuring success in the playoffs. Is that what you want with 1 year guaranteed of Kyle Tucker? Absolutely. How you get there, that's the part we're trying to figure out.
We're discussing the Cubs and their math equation, so to speak, with just 66 games to go post All-Star break here on Raheemy and Harris. And the Cubs, again, third best record in all of baseball, second best record in the National League. The Dodgers, they probably thought they had enough. Layla, do you remember the Dodgers offseason? How they just kept getting guys and, oh, the Cubs were interested in them.
Yeah, every reliever available.
The Cubs were interested in them.
We'll take him. We'll take him. We'll take him too.
And now the Dodgers somehow 19 games over 500, getting through that with piecemealing a staff, much like they did in the postseason last year. Shohei Ohtani is just now getting healthy and has a chance to be their ace once again. I just think there's not enough. You can't have enough arms. The bats are one thing, because the bats, you look at them as playing every day, and then, of course, you want depth in case you got to give a day off or somebody gets hurt.
You want a bench, too, to pinch hit in games and work your matchups.
But those arms, Layla, that's a different story, because you just need an army of arms. You need another wave and another wave and another wave, and then go down to AAA, and that guy's ready to contribute right now tonight when someone gets hurt.
Because here's the thing. I think you're looking at teams who say to themselves, we're going to wait. We're going to wait and see when the Diamondbacks, for example, think they're out of it, and we're going to swoop in and we're going to get Zach Allen, and we don't care what it takes to get him, prospect-wise, whatever. You know, I think of the Phillies. Dave Dombrowski gets criticism for, some say, bankrupting his farm system to pay for the series. But my issue with that is, does he get you there? You know, that's the flip side. It is how long it takes to build the big league club that you think is a real contender. And then what are you doing on the back end to fortify it? You need both. There's no doubt in my mind. But it's just a matter of whether or not you can even have yourselves in the conversation. If there are prospects that work in that, you have to make some tough decisions, as we talked about. For here, the tough decision was parting with Cam Smith before the season to get Kyle Tucker. You decided Matt Shaw was your backup plan for Alex Bregman, who comes to town this weekend, by the way. Well, if he, you know, still dealing with injuries, but his team comes to town. So that part of it, you decided that he was your guy. But there's a lot of people who are saying maybe you should have asked the same question we ask about Owen Casey, which is, what would it have taken in a deal where you package Matt Shaw before he made it to the big leagues? Those are the tough questions you have to ask yourself as a general manager.
So the good news is for the Cubs coming out of the gate, you mentioned they play the Red Sox for three, and the Red Sox have won 10 in a row. The Brewers, they start the second half with the Dodgers. And I know you're immediately thinking of the three-game sweep that just happened, but I think that is going to have the Dodgers feel in some type of way when they face the Brewers. And you would think it would have a better result. So this could be a chance for the Cubs to create some space when you're talking about only having a one-game lead. And I think getting off to the right foot, and really, there's so many teams that have so much pressure on them these next 2 weeks. I don't think the Cubs are one of them. I think the Cubs have already done enough to prove that they deserve help. It's not like if they lose five of the next six games, they're going to be like, oh, well, I guess we won't go get you help, because you guys don't look as good as we thought you would be.
Right, their future's not as precarious. And we've seen that happen in previous seasons. We saw it happen in 2021, where they lost 10 games in a row, and then you saw the massive sell-off at that trade deadline. You know, Anthony Rizzo goes, Chris Bryant goes. We obviously see Javi Baez goes, and he returns you PCA. You know, there are benefits to being able to get deals done with teams who are motivated sellers. And at the time, the Mets were.
And it helped that PCA was hurt.
Well, they were motivated buyers, I should say, and the Cubs were motivated sellers. Yes, and you take advantage of that when you can. But at the same time, nothing right now was going to lead to their fate right now. I feel like they played themselves last 2 years, 22, 23, into buying, which was great. But now you know they're buyers. Like, you knew at the beginning of the season.
83 and 79 would be an abject disaster. And we're not looking at that again. If they finish 500, they go 90 and 72. If they finish 500.
66 games left, so 33 and 33. which you like your chances. It's just a matter of whether or not you think the Brewers are going to play 500 ball the rest of the way out.
And we heard the sound off the top as we talk about the Cubs' math and trying to get into the playoffs. I guess the answer, the question we're asking here is, how many wins do they need, Layla? How many wins do they need at the end of the season to say, I know that's going to be a playoff team? Is it 90? Is it 95? What's the number you would ascribe to the Cubs right now?
I'm going to take the tone of the manager. And when he says you need 90, I say 90. If you set that goal for yourselves, not the phrase win the division, but I think it is a lot easier to say what's going to get us to be a 90-win team, then you can start to kind of visualize that. Then you can understand what you actually need. That gives you a benchmark of real comparison, not necessarily win the division, because then you're basing a lot of it on chance. If that were the case, I don't think any of us would have expected it to be as competitive in the month of June, for example, as it was. So that's part of the equation for me. And that's why I think it's important to go back and listen to what he had to say. So much of what they're doing right now, in my opinion, and in the offseason, was based off of what he said in that moment that we played earlier.
Here's the thing. He said that last year. I think every season is different. I think you're looking at a National League that will start to sort itself out in early August, right? And so I think the number to get in the playoffs could be 90. It could be that low. But I think to win the division, they're going to need to go 38-28 the rest of the way. That gets them 95 wins, and 95 is good enough, I believe, to win the division. 10 games over 500 the rest of the way.
If 95 isn't good enough to win the division,
then your division was a lot tougher.
You're in the best division in baseball.
Look, an argument can be made by that. Until the recent surge by the American League East, look around. They had teams, four of them, all over 500 and all contending for a playoff spot.
I still think the best division is probably the NL West, but they beat up on each other, though. That's the difference. You know, the Pirates are not as bad as the worst teams in the National League, but they're still 39-58, and so that might make the records at the top look a little different.
They also get to play the Rockies 13 times each.
Yes, and as I've said, you know, sometimes the worst teams in baseball, you're still in that predicament. But, like, for example, the team coming to town's in the AL East, and the worst team in the AL East is only 7.5 games out of a wild card.
Crazy.
Contrast that with, say, the Rockies, who are 30 games out of a wild card.
With that negative 253 run differential? Negative 253.
That's the part that's really upsetting. That's a number I can't comprehend.
You know what's crazy? It's negative 253, and the Cubs were barely beating the Rockies. The Cubs were barely beating. Remember how close those games were?
Yes.
Here.
And what's funny is the Cubs have the best run differential in baseball.
They do, 119.
That's what a difference home field can make. By the way, I am dressed for a pool party today because that's where I'm going after the show. I can't do transition. I forgot to tell you.
That's fine.
So join the Score today at Four Winds Casino and Resort in New Buffalo for a special pool party and appearance with Ozzie Guillen. You know, he's going to tell some stories. And me, Layla Rahimi. That is from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central. Of course, Four Winds is in the Eastern time zone. That's 5:30 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Ozzie will be doing a meet and greet with autographs. I can't wait to chat up Ozzie as well. I know he's got thoughts about the trade deadline. If you missed him, he was on earlier today with Mully and Haw. That's all today at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. You're welcome to come out and join us. And we actually have time to say hi to people since I'm not doing a show. That's always the hard part, too, is you do a show and you don't necessarily have time during breaks because you're setting up the next segment. But this time, we have time to say hello.
Ozzie also calling the Cubs the most complete baseball team he's seen this season. I understand why, because I remember what happened in that series where I thought the Cubs were going to lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. They did not. They did not.
Did you think it, or were you...
Both.
Wishing it?
Both. Both. Both things can be true.
I just think... I was of the impression that you just can't walk in there and say, we're going to win these three games. It wasn't going to be that automatic.
No, you're right. I mean, they took 2 or 3 from the Giants. They took 2 or 3 from the Blue Jays.
We just talked about how hard fought the Rocky series was.
Yeah, so that's why I was a believer. My beliefs were invalidated.
They were not. That's... Unfortunately, sometimes I do think the phrase that's baseball applies.
Oh.
There are still professionals on the other side.
That was bad baseball for the White Sox.
It happens. If they're not losing 21 in a row this year for me, I'm good. We have so much more to come here in Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. Summer League is going on for the Bulls in Las Vegas. One of the people involved in that, young star Matis Buzelis, who had a really emotionally interesting and informative sit down with Chuck Swirsky, the Bulls radio announcer here on The Score. I don't think you want to miss what he has to say. That's coming up next on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
White gets the pick here. Lob for Buzelis.
I forgot about the Stacey King call, little Boozy Vert. That was CHSN. We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. And the reason we bring up Matis Buzelis is because of the Bulls Summer League that is going on. Bulls played last night. That was a game that was, well, it was really the last afternoon. Wouldn't you say, Marshall? I feel like that was more of the time frame. And the Bulls have what we think is one game left in Summer League play. So as Summer League continues, Modest's days are done, but that doesn't mean that we didn't get to hear more from him when it came to what gets done at Summer League. It's a place where guys like Chuck Swirsky, for example, or a Bulls radio announcer goes to have a lot of discussion when it comes to just learning what's going on with the league, what's happening when it comes to teams making moves potentially where they see their direction is. Even though guys like Billy Donovan aren't coaching, they go out there to talk and just, I think, take the temperature of what's happening. It's almost become like a big convention when you consider what goes on at Bulls Summer League and in Las Vegas.
It's a party. Let's start with that. And when I say it's a party, I don't just mean for fans to go see their latest draft pick and do what they do, but the players themselves show up who are not playing in Summer League, who are not participating. They show up to support their next wave of players who most of them will not be on the team the following season, right? A lot of G League guys, a lot of fringe guys.
Post-college guys.
Yeah, post-college, trying to put together tape. And that's the thing. It's an opportunity for guys who don't necessarily have a future to open some eyes and to get on radars of all these front offices who are out there. It's like a big convention, and it's good that Modest was out there. I wish he played a little bit more. I know the reality of what it is, and he looked great in a couple of games. He had a game-high 28 in the one game that he played. And looking back at last season, it was just interesting to watch his development really go up.
Especially at his age, right?
Right. I think that's one of the things is understanding just how young he is. He's 20 years old now, so he was 19 last year at this time. And he had played for a season in the G League against other guys who kind of fit this Summer League mold, if you will. And I thought that was valuable for him. But then he takes another step in his rookie season with the Bulls and understands, oh, this is different. This is another level. This is a grown man's league. These are the best athletes in the world playing this sport in the toughest league in the world and on a team in which he didn't necessarily find his footing early.
Right. So the Bulls, which, by the way, beat the Bucks 102-96. We probably don't get to say that phrase as often as we'd like. The Bulls beat the Bucks. The Bulls Summer League team beat the Bucks Summer League team. And Javon Freeman-Liberty, familiar face, of course, to Paul Guy, 23 points in that game. But going back to Modest's development, what we saw was, I think, what the Bulls think their prototypical player development arc should look like. Draft a guy who is considered a steal now in the NBA draft out of G League Ignite. He obviously has ties here. He has the Hinsdale connection here from when he played before the G League. And then also is somebody who I think Arturis Karnišovas and the Bulls front office saw real potential in. He gets developed. Slowly he starts making his way, especially I would say after the All-Star break. It was trying to find minutes for him. Then it was trying to see if he was going to play in meaningful minutes. Then it was going to see if he was going to be on the court in the final minutes of the game. Then it was starting, folding all of that in. And by the end of the season, we knew that was somebody everybody wanted to build around. How much do they take that and then use it to then be a template for their future picks, like Noah Essanay at number 12 overall this year, Well, Matis Buzelis, I think we should start with Casey Johnson first. Casey Johnson, the noted Bulls reporter on CHSN, sat down with Matis and talked about where Matis thinks he is in his development.
What's your ceiling?
What's my ceiling? I don't know. I think I could be the best. I mean, that's just how I think. I always think I could be the best. So I never put a limit on anything for me. That's just how I was raised. So I think I could be the best player ever. That's just how I think. And if you don't think like that, I mean, it's not the sport for you.
Give it to him, Matis. Let him know what you really think. And here's something, because you talked a little bit about it, but I want to give you the numbers to back up what he's talking about. This is a guy that before the All-Star break last year was getting 14.8 minutes per game, and he wasn't doing much of anything, averaging 6.4 points, 2.8 rebounds. And here's the numbers that I really look at, Layla.
He was sliding in.
The offensive rating and the defensive rating pre-All-Star break. He had an offensive rating of 101 and a defensive rating of 117. That's per 100 possessions. What are you giving up and what are you putting in? 101, 117, that is a stark deficit. Post-All-Star break, that offensive rating bumps up from 101 to 109. Mm-hmm. The defensive rating falls from 117 to 113. Now you're getting closer. So you can look analytically at the numbers while he's averaging now, instead of 6.4 points per game in 14.8 minutes a contest, 13 points a game in 26.8 minutes per contest. And there's good news here too. While the field goal percentage went up from 441 pre-All-Star break to 467 post-All-Star break, the three-point percentage stayed the exact same, 36.1%. And that's something, it's above the league average. You can live with that. And his free throw percentage went from 79.6% to 83.3%. He just has all the tools. It's just more about getting bigger, stronger, more fearless with the basketball in his hands. And you can see all the stuff that can make this kid special one day.
Yeah, I hate to say the term downhill player because I wanted that out of Patrick Williams as well. Just a guy who knows his space and can take it to the hole also. If he can do both of those things and his 3-point stays the same, you're talking about a complete NBA talent. That's the biggest thing. Defensively, of course, that's an area of improvement. But when it comes to the offensive side of it, that is what I want to see. Use his height, use his body in a way where he's able to, I think while he's still on the thinner side, even though I know he's put on muscle, be able to use that body to move how you need to, agility to go through the lane. SGA is the best guy at finding space in the lane. I'm not saying you have to be that person, but if you want to watch tape of the best or compare yourself to the best, it's not bad to watch the guys who know how to do it.
If you're a Bulls fan and you watched a great deal of Matis Buzelis, the key play that you should be looking at, and it's not going to be like this depending on who's guarding him, but when he put the move on Luka Doncic baseline and then went up strong for the dunk, I think he could do that more consistently with more work on his strength and his skill, because the quickness is there. The ball skills are there, but you got to be strong with the basketball. And you mentioned downhill player. More of that, now you're getting to the free throw line.
Right.
And we know he can hit free throws. It opens up so many possibilities as to what he can do.
It does. And when you work on your body in that way, that can also kind of help you define your game, but it will also help with what I think is the gold standard of offensive measurement now in the NBA, and it is that offensive efficiency stat. Your Warriors, of course, were a big reason why. But when you can make the free throws, you can shoot threes, and you can be a downhill player, that's what I talk about offensively when I mean complete talent. He also discussed his maturity and his growth just as an individual, not just as a player. And that's where our friend Chuck Swirsky comes in. Chuck sat down with Matis and talked to him about that struggle, or maybe that arc of going from not getting a lot of playing time in his rookie season to start with to who he is now.
Matis, what did you learn about yourself on the court, off the court a year ago?
I learned a lot. I learned that you have to always communicate with your peers. Don't stay in the dark after bad games. Still be communicating with everybody. Don't shut anybody out. Talking to somebody is very important. And, you know, it was a dark time for me in the beginning of the season not playing, and I had to communicate with my mental health coach and my mom, my dad, family, just not shutting them out. So for me, it was learning how to get back on track even after bad days. And I've been doing that for a while now, but at this level, you have to be always engaged, and that's what I try to figure out this year.
Really profound discussion from Modest Bouzelis there. And I want to pause really quick and give that the appropriate amount of time, because we do have a little bit of breaking news. Breaking news on the score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. This is a preview of our next segment. The Bears and second round pick, according to Ian Rappaport, Rap Sheet, Shamar Turner, have agreed to terms on his 4-year rookie contract. That is according to a source as the logjam slowly begins to open up. Those were Ian Rappaport's words, and that is because we had the overwhelming majority of second round picks in the NFL not signed yet. So that is a preview of what we're going to talk about in our next segment. Going back to what Modest Bouzelis had to say, which I think is not something you hear out of players every day at all. And then for him to, at 20 years old, be able to talk about getting through what he said was a dark time and learning how to get better after his bad days, to be able to even admit that to a guy like Chuck, an interviewer, I think is incredibly commendable, but also shows the growth that he has achieved emotionally and mentally last year to now, to be able to say, I was in this place and now I feel better.
For him specifically, Layla, to understand, even though he is, quote-unquote, at home, you know, getting drafted by his hometown team, to go first with the G League Ignite and then come back and have the rookie season be what it was early on, and to bounce back in the way he did in the second half, tells you a little bit about this young man's resolve. I mean, Billy Donovan was very clear. Well, if you can't play good enough defense, you just won't be getting on the floor with the minutes. And that's on a team that's not been good defensively for a long time, right? When you're talking about the Bulls in general. But I think his ability to bounce back the way he did in the second half of the season, to be second, I know it's just all rookie, but second team all rookie in a what people will tell you, I think years from now, was not the greatest of rookie classes. Now he has an opportunity to take that next step in year two. And my question is, Layla, how good can he be in year two? Because I'm here to tell you, knowing we know about the Bulls roster, speaking of log jams and how it's just kind of set up to be what it is, you have to start looking for X factors, guys who can go well above what they did last year. And I think Modest is at the top of that list in terms of growth potential year over year.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the age of the other players involved. And I feel like they have made their next steps. Coby White has made his next step. You know who he is now. You know what the improved Coby White looks like. Ayo Dosunmu, healthy, if he's healthy. I feel the same way. You know, you know who he is and what he's bringing to the table and his improvement that we saw the last season and a half. So I think they're more defined with their product, but you can say that the person who has the greatest potential for the most improvement is without a doubt Modest for the reasons you just mentioned. Free throw shooting, if I, you know, hopefully see more out of the downhill game, him just going right to the bucket, and then also keeping that 3-point where it is, I think you're looking at somebody who will make a difference on a team. Record-wise, though, knowing what we know about the Bulls, say everybody's the same. And, you know, you've got Isaac Okoro in the mix now to at least help out with defense. Do you think that's enough to help them go from, say, a play-in to a playoff?
Yes, because play-in to playoff really means maybe you still get into the play-in, but actually win your play-in game. And I think the East is jumbled enough now that we don't know exactly what's going to be going on. We don't know how bad the teams are that have suffered all these changes and how good the teams are that have suffered all these changes.
So compare the last segment with the Cubs trying to define themselves as the goal is a 90-win team to the Bulls, who are still very much in the win the play-in in the Eastern Conference type of attitude.
Look, if Modest is, you know, out here averaging 20 points a game and doing big things, they could be a 6 seed. There's no reason why that couldn't happen. Billy Donovan had this team playing well. It's just they had limits. And the limits, the ceiling, doesn't look like it got that much higher because you didn't do it enough to change the roster.
I think also sometimes we forget about all the games the Bulls won early in the season to initially have us saying, well, this doesn't look very tanky.
Yeah.
And Zach LaVine was a big part of that.
And they didn't look tanky at the beginning or the end, not really even in the middle. And that's the concern is the middle. That's where they always end up, the middle. And that's where you do not want to be if you're an NBA team.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle?
Malcolm, in the middle.
So many references. So we mentioned it just now, the breaking news that Shamar Turner, according to many sources, is now signed with the Bears. He is a second-round pick. He's one of three. The Bears have two others who haven't signed yet. We continue to examine the developing story about the second-round picks overall in the NFL and what this could mean for the other two who the Bears absolutely need on the field as soon as they can. That's next on Raheem and Harris on The Score.
Raheem and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
I think the first thing we got to do is we got to play him in a defensive tackle and let him learn there, let him develop there, both as a three technique and as a nose. And then we'll worry about, you know, trying to see that flexibility. From a skill set standpoint, yeah, he's got some flexibility. We'll just have to see what he can learn and how quickly he can learn and adapt to what we're doing.
That was Dennis Allen talking about the second round pick, Shamar Turner. And the reason we bring him up here on Raheemy and Harris on The Score is because earlier this hour we found out, thanks to Ian Rappaport, that the Bears and second round defensive tackle Shamar Turner have agreed to a term on his 4-year rookie contract. So at that count, that would mean that we now have 28 of 32 second-round picks signed in the National Football League. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. We knew late last night that the 49ers had agreed to a contract with rookie defensive tackle Alfred Collins, who was the 43rd overall pick. That was worth $9 million guaranteed. So might these two deals be indicative of the logjam of second-round picks starting to come online and sign with their teams? The reason that this is important and the reason that we haven't seen the rest of them sign and we're only down to 28 out of 32 still being unsigned is because of what happened with the Houston Texans when they decided that they were going to guarantee Jaden Higgins a fully guaranteed contract for a second rounder. Higgins was the second pick of the second round, and so that's why this has become a discussion. It is a sad state of affairs in the NFL when all the teams want to fall in line like this. I actually applaud the Texans for rewarding their player and his talent with what they think should be a guaranteed contract.
They went and wasted no time, and that set up everybody else for problems. The Cleveland, of course, dealt with it immediately because, like, all right, the guy behind you got the money. I guess we got to give you the money.
And I think that was the right move. So now the question became, what was everybody else going to do? And now we're trying to figure it out. Do we have the full terms of the contract for Shamar Turner? We do not. But this is something that I know you and Russ Dorsey started watching on Monday at the beginning of the week.
Well, this is big because of where Shamar Turner was picked. Shamar Turner being the 30th player selected in the second round, that gives you like another data point for everyone that was drafted ahead of him. So now you've got the front of the round taken care of, and now more towards the back of the round taken care of. And now you can kind of fill in the gaps in between.
And the magic question becomes, is his money guaranteed? Does it follow the same structure?
It's definitely not 100% guaranteed because Alfred Collins' contract wasn't 100% guaranteed, but it was a much higher percentage than that slot from a year ago, year over year.
According to Nick Wagoner of ESPN, and this came out late last night, while Collins did not get the full guarantees that, for example, we had Schlesinger and Higgins receive, his $9 million guarantee clears the $6.93 million guarantee to Arizona Cardinals cornerback Max Melton when he was selected in the same spot in the second round of the 2024 NFL draft. So that's a good indication. Carson Schlesinger is the Cleveland Browns linebacker who you mentioned.
So that's at least 25% right there. So that's a huge jump in guaranteed money for the second round picks. And obviously the players would love for everybody to get guaranteed contracts. That's a thing in the first round, but it wasn't a thing in the second round. The percentage just kind of goes down pick by pick by pick by pick. And that's why Shamar Turner signing is a bigger deal than, say, if someone earlier, let's just go with, if we stick with the Bears, Luther Burden III, the seventh pick, and he gets a big guarantee. That's still not figuring out what's going to happen from 40 on overall.
And the big one who we think, both literally and figuratively, when it comes to the draft and this class and the second rounders in particular, is Ozzie Trapillo, who has already seen reps with the first team, as we know, in practices, because they need him at left tackle. One of the most crucial positions still in the league, of course. Braxton Jones injured with the broken ankle. So because of this, we think that he's the likely scenario for how the team begins its season. I would imagine, based on this information that we have and based on what we know, that Camp Trapillo is going to fight for as much as they possibly can of that guaranteed money.
Well, he's going to get at least as much guaranteed money as Shamar Turner did, and he was taking six spots ahead of Turner at 56 overall. I think this is great news, though, the Turner news coming out when it has. Still got a couple of days before the Bears rookies have to report on Saturday. So here's my optimistic expectation now, is that the majority of these players and all of the Bears will be at Hallis Hall and at their respective camps by the end of the weekend. And as long as that happens, I think everybody wins here.
And you can play, as we've mentioned, you can participate in camp activities, in OTAs, as we've seen, despite being unsigned. You can do that. And we've seen it many, many years running. It's just a matter of what this means for a possible holdout situation. And we've seen more of those than we usually have in the NFL. So that was a piece of this that I think is important. I'm excited to see what Turner can do in camp. I'm excited to see how Dennis Allen wants to use him. I feel like I've said this before, watching his tape is fun.
Yes.
So when you consider that part of it, just how he's able to also just wrap up and tackle so well at his age, I think that's really key.
I just want to know where he's going to be. Inside, outside, is he going to move? Is he going to be a moving piece? Because if Dennis Allen can get multiple guys to be moving pieces, like chess pieces, if you will, and not pawns, but I'm talking about like the queen. Can you move everywhere? Can you do all the things? Then this defense will have true hope. And the idea that they could, you know, get to the quarterback becomes more of a reality. And that's my starting point with the defense. Can you get to the quarterback in a passing league?
Well, and I know that has particularly been a need for you. The pass rush specifically has been something that you want to see them improve on, or at least add to. They've still got some money left under the cap that they can work with. We've seen them sign pass rushers before. Stands to be noted in this conversation, Von Miller reportedly signing with the Commanders, multiple people saying that that took place. Is that somebody that you would have considered?
If the Bears consider, I'll say this. I've been in the city for 4 years now. I have never trusted the Bears more than I do in this moment, because of the people who are running both the offense and the defense. They have proven track records, and they know what they need to make their systems work. It's that simple for me.
I agree. I think this is the biggest year to be able to trust people and to know also that the personnel that they want, they're going to be able to use. That's been a big part of it too. You can be a good judge of player talent, but if you don't know how to use them, which we've seen explicitly over the past 4 years.
Yeah, explicitly is a good word.
Explicitly. Then I think that they're in a better place. Coming up next. Yes, Marshall.
Well, I was just going to tell people they could listen all week for their chance to win a pair of tickets to see Toto and special guests Christopher Cross and Men at Work on Saturday, August 9th at Credit Union One Amphitheater. That's in Tinley Park. Tickets, they're available right now at LiveNation.com.
Get your yacht rock on. Don't get your pool party on with them, though. That's for Ozzie Guillen and me at Four Winds Casino. We should expand on this. I think I know just the people to do it with.
Oh, multiples? You got multiple people?
I do. How about we talk some more football? How about we talk some more Bears?
Bears.
Adam Hoge and Adam Johns. That's right. The Hoge and Johns podcast joins us next to talk more Bears. We'll get their thoughts on Turner being signed, what they think about the Bears opening up camp in just days. And oh, by the way, Adam Johns made a little bit of news. So we'll ask him about that as well. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. You're listening to us on the Odyssey and iHeart Radio apps.
Go Bears!